Hello and welcome to NewsHour live from the BBC World Service in London. I'm Rebecca Kesby. Negotiators at the COP27 climate summit in Egypt are in for a long night as the precise wording on the latest draft of the loss and damage proposal is thrashed out. We're told delegates are now very close to agreement. The loss and damages fund would be to help the poorest countries worst affected by climate change. If it's agreed, it would be seen as a significant achievement for this COP. Developing countries have been pushing for such a fund for years, but the idea wasn't even on the agenda to begin with. If the text is agreed, it's not the end of the negotiations. There's still questions about who would pay for the fund, among other things, and of course still disagreements on other commitments to reduce carbon emissions. Let's go live now, straight to Egypt, where the negotiations are taking place, to the BBC's Justin Rowlatt, who's there. Justin, what's the latest?
Well, I'm outside the negotiating room now. Negotiators are coming and going. The story isn't quite as you described it. We thought this loss and damage deal was done and dusted early this afternoon, and we expected it to sort of be a mark the breakthrough, a sort of break the logjam in negotiations, and would then free up other talks. That has not proved the case, and the negotiators have been talking for the last 4 or 5 hours about other issues, but we've just discovered that they've reopened these talks about loss and damage. We understand it's been done by the UK, the US, the EU and Switzerland have said they want to reopen the discussions, much to the consternation of the developing nations who thought that a deal had been done and were celebrating a historic deal. Indeed, you know, these talks may be very problematic opening it up, because some of the key negotiators I know have already gone home. For example, the lead negotiator for Africa, who talked about what a powerful symbol it was that such a deal, the deal for the Loss and Damages Fund, had been done on the African continent. And he was absolutely delighted with what had been achieved. And now it looks like it's under discussion again. And you know, we could have hours of talks ahead of us.
Yeah, that's true, Rebecca. Justin, because everybody we've spoken to has been saying a similar line, actually, as you said, that this deal was pretty much over the line. We know that the United States and China have been pretty hesitant about signing up to it. But news there that the EU and the UK as well may have issues. Do we know what those issues are?
No, I wonder whether this isn't, I've tried to inquire of the nations involved whether they're trying to get something else back on the table that they've lost, because normally you would reopen this as a way of forcing your kind of, you know, counterparty's hand on something. I can't get a clear answer on that. But it is surprising. Remember this, I mean, the origins of the solution were a proposal which was written by the European Union. And then there was a kind of an amended proposal that the UK and US brought in, which kind of, you know, opened up the talks and led to the solution, which, as I say, everybody thought was inked. It was a done deal. Somebody said to me, actually, hold on, Rebecca, I may just finish. Somebody said to me, you know, there's a gentleman's agreement that the deal won't be reopened. Well, it seems that gentleman's agreement, as it was described to me, has been ditched. And they're now renegotiating the discussion, reopening the discussions, which is a big setback here.
Absolutely. I do hope you've got access to some good caffeine, Justin, because you're going to be up all night by the looks of it. Just briefly, tell us a bit more about the idea of loss and damages, because that's the key thing to all of this that people are really hoping may make a difference.
Well, this has been something that developing nations have talked about since the inception of these talks 30 years ago, back in 1992. They said, as well as cutting emissions and helping developing countries adapt to the changes that climate change is bringing, there was also a requirement to help them cope with the immediate effects of climate change. So we're talking the droughts, the storms, the floods that climate change increasingly is bringing. And so it's for 30 years, they've said they wanted some kind of fund, some kind of payment for this. They've described it in terms of reparations or compensation for the damage caused, because, of course, developing countries got rich burning fossil fuels and arguably therefore, well, not arguably, and were you know, responsible for, you know, initiating the issue of climate change. Obviously, there's more shared responsibility now, because there are some very big developing nations. China and India are the first and third biggest emitters now. Anyway, so this has been a long discussion. Developed nations never wanted to talk about it. it wasn't even on the agenda until about 2 weeks before these talks started. Yeah. And yet it looked hours ago like we had a deal. And so it was a really historic development. Developing nations were celebrating, and now we're back. We're not quite at the beginning, but certainly back talking about it all once again.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Justin Rowlatt, for that live update. This is a changing story, changing situation, as Justin was explaining. We can get at the perspective now of a climate activist from Zimbabwe. I've been speaking to Elizabeth Gulugulu, who is in Sharm el-Sheikh for the summit. I spoke to her a little bit earlier about what she saw as the progress of this potential deal on loss and damage.
First and foremost, loss and damage was not even on the agenda for this year's COP27. So we started advocating for loss and damage. And I think a few months back, this is when loss and damage was approved to be on the agenda. Now that it was on the agenda, definitely people were advocating for a funding facility for loss and damage, and the negotiators were negotiating, especially from the Global South. But the negotiations were really not going on so smoothly. But according to the draft, which was released this afternoon, it then highlighted on the second paragraph that it considers establishing the funding facility for loss and damage, which is quite, I can say, moving in the right direction. That is exactly what people need and what people want.
Are you confident that richer countries will stump up the cash that they say they will? And are you confident that governments in poorer countries will spend it responsibly on things that help people deal with climate change?
Last year, the negotiations that happened in Glasgow, you realise that the developed countries are mandated to make sure that they at least channel $100 billion to the developing countries, but these negotiations did not go well. So there is really no guarantee, but it's a matter of choices. What we have put on paper, definitely it has to be observed, right? Otherwise, we are doing these discussions and negotiations for nothing. So we need to put accountability measures to the people that have pledged that they will pay. And we also need to put accountability measures and a proper framework to the people that are going to receive the money, making sure that these funds, they are actually going and will be channeled to the communities that really deserve these funds.
You're from Zimbabwe. You're currently in Egypt for this summit, and it is being called, isn't it, the African COP. Has Africa got what it needed to out of this particular COP?
In terms of making sure that there is a funding facility for loss and damage, I think this could be a win for the African countries, because these are the most countries that are particularly being affected by the effects of climate change. According to the recently launched IPCC report, it says that especially countries from the northern region and from the southern region are very, very vulnerable. And, you know, if this is concluded and decided on, this will be a win for the African countries. But also, remember, we still have a lot of issues at stake. This is just one component out of I don't know how many negotiation tracks, which we also need to make sure that we also try by all means to advocate. We still have not yet received the $100 billion. So we're still lagging behind on that. We have issues to do with carbon credits and carbon markets. How are we going to benefit as Africans? We still need to unlock jobs through renewable energy. We still need to make sure that there is transfer of technology from the developed countries to the developing countries. So this is just one out of 10. But so far, I think we are heading in the right direction.
And that was Elizabeth Gulugulu, who's a climate activist from Zimbabwe there. Earlier, I also spoke to Salim Al-Huk, who is advising the Least Developed Countries Group on loss and damages negotiations. And as Justin was saying earlier, the idea of the loss and damages is something the developing countries have been talking about for years, and yet richer countries have managed to avoid it until now. So what's changed? How have the poorer countries managed to get it back on the agenda?
Well, I think what has changed is reality on the ground, such as the devastating floods in Pakistan and then again floods in Nigeria. These are all now very clearly and scientifically, credibly attributed to having been exacerbated, not caused, but certainly made much worse because the global temperature has risen due to emissions of greenhouse gases. So we now have an attribution of human-induced climate change to causing these problems, and therefore a responsibility of the Framework Convention to deal with it, and for the major polluting countries, particularly the richer ones, to provide some support to the victims of pollution.
I don't think it's too controversial to say that many richer countries are quite good at using the language of saying they're going to change, but sometimes the actions are a little bit slow in coming to fruition. Are you confident that that money will be found and will be put to this fund as an urgency?
Well, I assume goodwill on the part of all the countries that have agreed to set the fund up. I have no reason to doubt their goodwill, and we shall now seek to find ways to support the victims of human-induced climate change from all the countries in the world, but particularly the richer, more developed countries who have a particular responsibility.
If this deal of loss and damages does go through, and it does look as if it will, how much of a breakthrough would that be for COP27?
Well, from the perspective of the vulnerable countries who have trying to get this agreed for many, many years now, as you said, this is a big, big breakthrough, and it's certainly the headline message coming out of Sharm el-Sheikh of COP27. There's still a long way to go. We haven't got any money. We've just agreed to set up a fund. But that in itself is a big breakthrough, and we work on it and come back again next year in COP28 and hopefully make it into a functional fund.
Yeah, you talk about next year, COP28. No doubt there'll be COP29, COP30. This is an idea that's been going for 30 years now since the concept of COP was invented. Back then, it was described as an urgent, pressing problem. 3 decades later, we're still struggling to even get the basics agreed upon and action coming through. You're from Bangladesh, which is a country that has had so many climate-related problems in recent years and getting worse. Do you sometimes feel really disheartened at the lost years that have gone where not enough has been done?
That's certainly very true. We have lost a lot of time, but then we can't afford to lose more time. So we feel it's better late than never. And every time we come to these events, we try and galvanize and raise ambition by all countries, because it is a global problem. It's not just our problem. All countries are going to have to deal with the impacts of climate change, even rich countries like Europe, who just went through a heat wave, and the United States, who just got hit twice by Hurricane Ian and Hurricane Nicole in Florida just in the last few days.
And that was Salim Al-Huq speaking to us earlier.